Everything I learned about podcasting, I have learned through listening to Farnoosh Torabi. Just a slight exaggeration there, but it's kind of true. Farnoosh Torabi is the host of the So Money podcast. It's one of the top personal finance podcasts out there. I've talked about it before. I love it. She started her show as a career pivot after she got laid off from a business TV gig during the recession. Now, one thing you probably wouldn't know about me is that I actually am obsessed with personal finance. I'm a total saver. I have been ever since I earned my first paycheck. I like knowing how money works because my parents, when I was growing up, really didn't talk about money. All I knew was that when my dad pulled out the shoebox of bills once a month, always on the dining room table, and he and my mom started talking about missing checks that she hadn't written in her little register, it was ugly. I hated it. And that is what life was like before online banking, people. It is true. If you don't remember it, you are lucky. So once I started making my own money, I started reading books to learn about how to make money grow. And that's what's so cool about podcasts like So Money. There's a lot of knowledge out there, and it's basically just free for a download. Farnoosh has interviewed everybody from motivational speakers like Tony Robbins to CEOs to well-known entertainers like a recent episode she did with the actress Busy Phillips. I learned something every single time. And when I say I've learned a ton about podcasting, I really have. Farnoosh is about to hit her 1,000th episode of So Money. 1,000! And that show is constantly evolving, as is Farnoosh. And that is what I am fascinated by. So on this Dying to Ask, Farnoosh and I, love how that sounds, break down how generations are looking at money these days and how they're making big ticket purchases like, say, buying a house. Her advice for millennials on how to save a lot of cash to make a down payment. And I kind of fangirl, maybe stalk, depending on your perspective, over what it takes to hit the 1,000 episode mark of a podcast. I'm so excited to have Farnoosh Torabi on Dying to Ask.
I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I am obsessed with knowing how people do things. They write the book, they start the company, they go from idea to reality. I call it the art of the follow-through, and I want to know how people go from A to B. This is the Dying to Ask podcast. So Farnoosh, I kind of had to laugh when your producer sent me a pronunciation of your name because my kids know your voice in the car when we go to pickup. I've been listening to you since, I think, episode 100, and you're closing in on 1,000. So you're kind of the soundtrack of our car ride home in the afternoon
from school. Oh, my gosh. Wow. What great exposure for your kids to learning about money in the car.
Well, it's funny they say that because it does open up a lot of discussion. So a lot of times, you know, especially my eighth grader will say, well, what's Farnoosh talking about today? You know, and sometimes it is something that starts a discussion. And I think that's one of the interesting things about your show is that you've opened up this dialogue between the generations to talk about money. And there's a lot that, you know, as a Gen Xer, I don't really get about millennials sometimes and vice versa. And I think that's really awesome.
Thank you. Well, it is not a coincidence that most of my audience is Gen Y and Gen X. And I think there are a lot of gray, there's a lot of blurry lines between who's Gen X and who's Gen Y. I'm like an elder Gen Y on the cusp of Gen X. So I kind of feel like I straddle both generations a little bit.
Well, it's funny. I feel like I'm the cream in the Oreo cookie between the generations now because I have boomers in my newsroom and then I have millennials and they both have very different money concerns right now. And I'm just like trying to save for college and pay off my house, that kind of stuff. But yeah. You have been really learning a lot about millennials and house buying. And I know that I hear a lot of my coworkers starting to talk about the fact that, like, you know, they're starting to get married and they're having kids and they're realizing, you know, like living in a loft is not really great when you have toddlers. So their worlds are really starting to expand a lot. So what have you been finding out about millennials and home ownership?
What's interesting is that while in some ways the headlines would not suggest this, because we often hear about millennials being cash strapped and broke and, you know, but what we actually found that the National Association of Realtors found that 37% of first-time buyers are millennials. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that millennials aren't just the fresh out of college cohort anymore, right? That they're growing up. I'm technically a millennial. I'm an elder millennial. But I
think you sound so wise when you say it that way.
Yeah, elder millennial.
You're like the Yoda of millennials when it comes to this stuff.
I'm going to totally trademark that.
You should totally do it. Yeah.
The Yoda of millennials. I love it. But I think that the truth is they're getting older. They're wanting to settle down. They're looking to build wealth. They've been hearing their parents tell them about homeownership their entire lives. They've been rolling their eyes at it. But now they're ready to to really take it seriously. And not to mention what's happening externally is that interest rates are super low right now, historically speaking, that there's a lot of supply. Depending on the market you're in, it's a buyer's market. I'm in New York, it's absolutely a buyer's market. So if you are ready to purchase, the timing couldn't be better.
The challenge, I guess, for a lot of them is, yeah, it's a buyer's market, but they're also, with the talking about generations, with boomers, you know, some want to downsize, a lot of people don't. So in some areas, like I'm out in California, it can be very difficult to crack into that market, even if you are a buyer, because you have a lot of people who maybe have a lot of cash that they can put up, and they're snapping up houses really quickly.
Yeah.
Which is hard.
It is hard. So I think that to kind of increase your chances of finding the home that you want and being able to actually land it is to give yourself time. That knowing that the hot time to buy is springtime, and that's when a lot of the cash buyers come out in some of these hotter pockets of the country like New York and LA and San Francisco. So if timing is not that important to you as far as seasonality, a lot of people want to buy in the spring because they want to start the new school year in the fall. I get it. I'm that market. But if you're not interested in that, then I think that you can use time to your advantage and kind of buy when it's an off season and not feel like you have all this competition. So there is a bit of a cycle to the market, right? As far as when it gets to be more competitive than not, and knowing that I think can help you navigate it a lot better.
When I'm not binging, you know, So Money or a million other podcasts, I am usually binging HGTV, and I love the million-dollar listing shows. Like, I love watching people walk through houses. I love going to open houses. I'm a total real estate tire kicker. The thing that I've noticed lately is that there's so much social media and exposure to really cool houses that sometimes when you go to something that's actually your price range, it's horrendously disappointing to see what you can actually afford. So what is your advice for people, especially these first-time buyers, about being realistic about what you can really do?
Go with someone who's an experienced buyer to the house. Go open house shopping with a parent, with a sibling who has gone through it, because that perspective is invaluable. When I bought my first condo in New York City, it was a shoebox. And I was like, what could I even do in this place besides put in a couch and a bed? And my mother came with me and she said, you can go to IKEA and totally redo the kitchen. You can some fresh paint here, some really cute furniture. Like, she kind of like brought it to life for me because she had been through a bunch of remodels and renovations and home purchases herself. So she knew what the possibilities were. And she was looking at this otherwise barren square shoebox of a home, literally 400 square feet, through a much more optimistic lens, I think, and a more experienced lens than I was. And it was thanks to them that I did buy the home with their encouragement, and they were right. You know, yeah. It just kind of takes someone with more experience to tell you the possibilities.
Do you think are people in different parts of the country saving for a house the same kind of way? Because if you live in a place like where you live, or even where I live out here in Northern California, a down payment, a traditional down payment, say you're doing 20%, is a really hard thing to do when prices are so high. Are people still saving that much money before they jump into a house? And should they?
I mean, it's not whether they should, they have to. That's kind of just the way the market is right now, that especially in places like Northern California, New York, 20% down payment is the norm. If you want to be competitive, you know, because there are going to be people who are going to have 25% or all cash. But I think generally across the country, we're talking 10 to 20%. And yeah, you're going to have to figure that out. And that's why, again, going to my first piece of advice is really giving yourself a healthy timeline. So if you have sort of a type of house in mind that's going to cost you definitely a certain amount of money, well, working backwards and reverse engineering that. And some people are getting help from family. Some people are just hunkering down and saving and changing their lifestyle, living with their parents for the first 5 years of their adulthood to shore up that down payment money. And that's just the reality. And that is, I think, what is the biggest uphill battle. But we're seeing more and more millennials prioritize this and making lifestyle changes to be able to qualify.
Lifestyle changes, which is usually code for not buying other stuff, which is hard.
Yeah, not buying stuff that you thought was important to you at one point and now isn't, because you're looking through your expenses again through a new lens of, I want to be a homeowner. So do I really need this XYZ membership, the you know, whatever you're, I find that a lot of the automatic payments that we make every month, our credit cards are hooked up to so many websites. We kind of spend effortlessly.
Yeah.
The plus side of technology is that you can have all these conveniences and you can spend very easily. But at the, on the other hand, it's like you can spend kind of without thinking, right?
Absolutely.
And that can create some unnecessary expenses. So I've partnered with Chase Home Lending, and we looked at this concept of, you know, cutting back. And we actually found that 70% of millennials who want to buy a home are more than okay with cutting back on what we call sort of these recreational expenses, trips, experiences with friends, dinners out, memberships, et cetera, et cetera. I think because, again, when you can anchor your financial decision making around something that's really important to you, like you've established your values, you've established your goals. And in this case, for some people, we're talking about home buying. I think it makes it a lot easier to then go back to all those expenses that you've been making and cut them out. And it doesn't feel as painful because you're like, this is all leading up to a much more exciting purpose.
Yeah, it's the long game.
It's the long game.
Okay, speaking of the long game, 1,000 episodes, I'm blown away by that number. And I'm just curious to know, from your perspective, I mean, would you have ever guessed that you would have gone to 1,000 episodes on this show?
Probably yes, only because remember, when I started the show, I was 7 days a week. So at that pace, I would have hit that in 3 years, 2.5 years. I slowed down.
If you didn't die. I remember when you went to 3, I'm like, good move, girl, but take it to 2.
So I gradually moved to 5 days a week, and now we're at 3 days a week, which I think is a really good balance for me. It's kind of the sweet spot, and I think listeners appreciate the fewer the episodes. They feel like they can actually catch up. But no, would I have expected that for 5 years later I'd be as excited as when I first started the show? Probably not. This is the kind of like the first project that I've initiated that I've kept with it for these many years, and I haven't lost stamina. I think because I try to grow with the audience. I don't just kind of, the show is different when you start. If you you started it 5 years ago. Now it's kind of different. The format is, it's mostly the same, but it's different in the sense that I've incorporated more of audience engagement. It's fewer episodes per week. We do some themed episodes. We do a lot of, I listen to the audience. What do you want to learn about? What do you want to hear? What are your questions? And I really make sure that that is what's leading the show's direction, as opposed to me in a box thinking, okay, I'm going to do it this way. You have to start somewhere, but I think eventually your job is to always be receptive to your audience. And that's what keeps it fresh. That's what keeps me engaged. And always, like, I feel like the show is evolving. And that is certainly helpful when you have a grind to produce.
Yes.
Yes. As you know, it doesn't just happen on its own, that there's a lot behind the scenes. So you need all of that to feel continuously motivated.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. And I think your transparency in telling your audience, and now I look at it from a broadcaster, I'm like, I want to know like how you're putting the recipe together. So I'm always fascinated by that part. But I think it's also interesting to kind of take people along on that ride as well, because we're all, no matter what we do, we're always looking to re-engage, because otherwise life gets really boring. And that's when you get stale, and that's dangerous.
It is. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I get to interview all these fascinating people on the podcast, for me, that's such a gift. And frankly, has kept me going, because it's like a constant learning experience for me. You know, I got questions. I don't know all the financial answers, and my guests have been so inspiring. And so it's been a real opportunity to grow as well.
That's great. So what's up for you next year? Do you have any goals for 2020?
I want to do a YouTube channel. I want to write a book. I want to have a Netflix series. If anyone's listening at Netflix, I want to do, you know, I got to put this out there, right? I got to put it in the universe.
Is that your number one tip to people who do want to grow and change and do something really big, like say even start a podcast? Just put it out there?
Put it out there. Accountability is really important. So I'm telling you, you're going to keep me accountable. I think that's important. You got to feel like you have the support in the community for sure.
Farnoosh, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. And thanks for all the info you shared on the show. I'm not kidding you when I tell you I've listened to probably 900 episodes. And normally if somebody would say that to me being on the other side, I would be like, a little scary. But I genuinely did. So this is it's really fun to get to chat with you. And I wish you the best of luck in 2020. YouTube channel, Netflix, holding you to it.
And also one more resource. For those of you listening who want more advice on home buying, I've partnered with Chase Home Lending, chase.com/mortgage. There's tons of resources and you can connect with a Chase Home Lending advisor.
Oh, I can't even tell you how much fun that was for me. Honestly, like I cannot wait to go to school pickup and drop a little, I had Farnoosh on my podcast today on The Boys. Seriously, that was just like a real highlight of my podcasting year here. So please check out So Money. On Fridays, Farnoosh does an Ask Farnoosh segment, and it usually goes about 20 minutes, and it's all based on questions from listeners either through email or through DMs. And Instagram is the best way to keep up with Farnoosh. You will find her at Farnoosh Torabi. And Farnoosh said you got to put things you want out there in the universe. So here I am. I've got a download goal for this show, and I will get there pretty soon if you tell people that it's worth listening to. So if you liked this episode, you learned something, will you share it on social? You can do it right there from your podcast app. You could also leave us a rating or review on Apple iTunes. Thanks so much for listening, and catch you next time on Dying to Ask.